You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, welcome back to Woodburn Corner, the West Bromwich Albion podcast brought to you by Albion fans at the Birmingham Mail. I am Graham Brown and this is Joe Chapman.
Good afternoon, Graham. How are you?
I am brilliant and all the better for what is going to be a belting podcast this week. We have been speaking to Carlton Palmer, who's got some incredible stories about his time at the Albion, his time playing football under the influence of alcohol, and some pretty pointed views about players who've got a lot of caps for England who he reckons he's better than. It's a really good interview. Second portion of the podcast is it's about time I get put to the sword. Joe, what's happening?
I'm going to be asking you a question from each of Albion's last 15 years to test your knowledge and basically just to see how much of an Albion fan you really are.
So I've got no idea what's coming, but I've been an Albion fan for 30 years. A bit of a lapsed one lately, with having children and so on. So we'll just see how we get on, and you'll learn that that you know more about the Albion than the person who hosts this podcast. The podcast, incidentally, is going really well. Lots and lots of people listen to it, but if you like it, please tell your friends. We've got loads of great things coming up. This is the podcast where we ask the questions of the dressing room. We don't ponce around with, should this have been a corner or should this have been a penalty or so on. We ask people the questions you want to hear the answers to. We've got some great guests coming up. It's going to be good, isn't it, Jeff?
I'm particularly excited about one or two guests that we're going to have lined up. But generally speaking, it's going really, really well. And long may that continue.
Absolutely. But first of all, we've got Carlton Palmer. So we'll be speaking to our football editor, Matt Kendrick. Hope you enjoy it.
Tell me one funny story that from your career as a footballer. What I'm putting you on the spot again. What would it be?
Well, it would have been the one that's in the book about the QPR game. I mean, that was quite surreal, really. It wasn't planned. It wasn't preempted, and you know, I was stitched up by Waddle and Woods. They both knew that they weren't playing. You know, I thought we were all in the same boat until the team was named on the Saturday, and you know, but as I say, it is what it is.
What's the deal then? Not without giving too much away, to talk us through it to anybody who's not ready.
Well, we had a game. We're playing QPR New Year's Day. And we went down to London the day before.
When you're at Wednesday, yeah?
Yeah, we went down to London the day before, but Trevor lived in London, so he went back to his house. And we got down there at lunchtime, and the game's not till the following lunchtime. So the lads were going to go and have a few drinks at the pub that was local. And it ended up being a session. So at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm coming out of Tramps nightclub and we've got a game at 12 o'clock against QPR. And then we get a team meeting the next morning. Them two aren't playing. Waddle and Woods, they both failed fitness tests. They know they weren't playing. And I was playing. So, you know, it was a nightmare because, you know. But we ended up winning. We were on a 19-game unbeaten run. And, you know, as you do, at the end of the day, I knew what I was doing, but when it comes down to it's time to play, the whistle goes, you get on with it, you do what you've got to do, it makes no difference. And I, as I say in the book, if alcohol had affected my performances and the way I trained, I would have knocked it on the head, but it didn't. I trained better or played better when I had a drink.
And tell us how Trevor found out.
Well, it was, because I didn't know, but Woodsy was in there, and like Woodsy knows Rod Stewart, and he was in there with his missus, and I see some guy with his ear all over the place, and I see what, but and so as we're coming out, we get photographed, but they weren't there for us; they were there for Rod Stewart. It just so happens that we give him a likely story and that whatever.
Chris Woodsy's back or something. Yeah, dodgy tracksuit.
No, a Mizuno tracksuit. My sponsors were happy, but. You know, yeah, so we had to donate some money to charity, but it caused a problem because I think it got to a point with Trevor Francis that, you know, he found that he was thinking that I was hard work to work with, but it's ironic he sold me, and then his first job after he got the sack from Sheffield Wednesday at Birmingham, he tried to buy me, make me the first signing for Birmingham.
Okay, I told you it was a good story. We're going to be back with Carlton Palmer in a little bit, but now, as promised, we are going to spend only 90 seconds talking about the search for a new Albion manager. So, Joe, get the clock ready.
I've timed it. I'm ready to go. And okay. On your marks, get set, button pressed.
Right then, Joe Chapman. Who should be the next Albion manager?
I'm going to come in short and sweet. I'm going to explain why I think Nigel Pearson should be the new Albion manager. I don't believe that you can restrict yourself to just out-of-work managers. They're free agents for a reason. Nigel Pearson has recently picked up a job in Leuven, which is in the Belgian second division. He's won 5 of his first 8 games in charge, lost just the one. He's obviously got very, very good experience of Albion as a club. Coaching under Brian Robson, and played a big part in the Great Escape, and of course he did the Great Escape all by himself with Leicester as well, and kicked off their title charge the season after. So, for me, Nigel Pearson, and yourself.
Well, I think Nigel Pearson's an altogether too boring choice for the Albion. I think it's important that we have a firefighter. I don't know whether he has got some firefighting experience, as you say. I'm gonna go, the day after I said that Ronald Koeman should be our next manager, I'm going to throw in the name Andre Villas-Boas. He's got Premier League experience. He's not a firefighter, but he's 40 now, and he's a 40-year-old manager with 7 years experience.
I can't believe he's 40.
I know.
Been around forever.
He's managed at Spurs, he's managed at Chelsea, and I always like a manager that wasn't any good as a footballer, because that must mean he's somewhere good at managing. So I think Nigel Pearson's surely too boring.
Well, we've already sacked Andre Villas-Boas, haven't we? He was on that long list of names of players of managers that we recently removed from their jobs.
This is true. Well, we have 5 seconds remaining, so I think it's fair to say it's going to be Sam Allardyce anyway.
Right, well, there you go.
There we are.
Done.
There's your 90 seconds. Now we move on to what we're all about. Let's go back to our interview with Carlton Palmer. This is the bulk of the interview now. He was with us to promote his book, It Is What It Is. And this is a bit more about his time at the Albion, why he thinks he deserves more England caps, and why he thinks he's just as good a player as Gareth Southgate.
What would a typical day have been if you're a first-team footballer at West Bromwich Albion in the mid to late 80s? What would it have been like?
Well, I would have been training in the morning, and then training in the afternoon, and I'd still be at the club at 6 o'clock, 6:30, finishing my jobs off, cleaning boots. Dave Matthews, he was like, you know, he was the kit man at the time. Yeah. Everything had to be spick and span. And I think that's what's missing with the game today, especially with the young boys. Get too much money in there, and they don't know, they've not had to earn it really.
Yeah.
And that's the problem.
And what would like the diet be like? Would they give you breakfast before you train and stuff like that, or would you have to sort yourself out?
Yeah. No, there was not much talk about diet and fitness and that at that time.
So I think you alluded to it then. You get someone into the office, don't you? You said Bully was in there, and you say Dave Burrows went to Liverpool. What was the thinking behind it? The club was skint, is that?
Well, we were all at the training ground at Spring Road, and the three of us got told we had to go to the club. So we thought, we used to socialise together, we thought, oh, Jesus, what's going on here? And Budgie went in first, and he come out, he says, we're all being sold, mate, the club's skint. He says, so I said, where are you off? He said, Liverpool. I said, where am I going? He says, I don't know. He said, but I'm off to Liverpool. So I went in, and Chelsea and Sheffield Wednesday were in for me.
So who was it who had the conversation with you then? Was it the manager who pulled you in, or was it?
I can't remember now. I can't remember who pulled us in. But it was one of those, like, you know, these clubs have agreed fees for you.
Yeah.
Choose where you want to go, really, you know.
How did that feel? Did you realise that's what football is?
Yeah.
You know, you can't expect too much or to be anywhere forever?
You want to move on, you want to go to a bigger club, you want to be successful. So, but it was just a shock because it came out of the blue. There was nothing, you know, Monday morning you go and training, and the next minute you get summoned up to the main office, and it's like, right, you're on your way. And I'm sat in the office and speaking to Ken Bates on the phone. Do you know what I mean? But Nobby Stars had said to me, he said, don't even entertain it, get yourself up the road to Sheffield Wednesday with Big Rod.
The theme of your book is kind of how you've had to kind of work hard and justify, you know, I know you've always felt like you've belonged in the dressing rooms you've been in, but the feeling I get is the wider perspective is, you know, this kind of, this gangly kid from the outskirts of Birmingham, you've not always kind of come across the most fashionable kind of footballer, have you?
Well, that's right.
So has that been something that's driven you on? You know, because you've kept some fairly good company on football pitches.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't see it the way other people see it. I knew I was a good player, so it didn't really bother me at the time when I was playing, because my answer was every weekend. I was a consistent player and I was good at what I did. But when you retire and you hear that, you know, and it's not been very often, to be fair, but like when somebody does a programme of the worst players to play for England, you know, you feel you have to respond because...
It's just a cheap shot though, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's by comedians, but it then gets gravity because people then start to jump on the bandwagon with it. I mean, I didn't just play for England... You know, for a few years. I played for him for a long time. I was captain of the England under 21s, although I never played at schoolboys. But from the age of 18, 19, I've always played for England.
Yeah.
So it's not like something
it's not
that.
Cap wonder,
yeah,
is
that? Yeah, and I honestly believe that if I'd have kept my mouth shut in certain areas, I would have gone on to have 60 or 70 England caps. But I was never going to do that. Whenever I got in a position to speak out about stuff, I was always going to. To do that, you know, but you've got to get in that position first. I just felt that, you know, that the people who tend to criticise you, I've been in dressing rooms, I've played with Ian Rush, Mark Hughes, Gary McAllister, Chris Waddle, you speak to players, Gianfranco Zola, speak to Ray Wilkin, speak to people like that. Never one of those players has ever criticised me, and neither one of them likes playing against me.
Yeah.
So when people turn around and say, well, everybody's entitled to their opinion, I'm not bothered about that, if I'm not somebody's cup of tea, but you can't say I was a crap player.
Yeah.
You can't say that. That's not justified.
Yeah.
In any, you know, that's not fact.
Yeah.
Whether I'm your cup of tea or not, it's not fact.
I think, again, in the book, you touch on the fact that, you know, this physique of yours, you just used it to such... good effect, whether it be the engine that you've got to cover space, whether it be the body shape when you're trying to close people down. You know, is that something kind of that you just had this work ethic, or is it good coaching, or is it a bit of both that's made you kind of maximise what you've got, really?
Well, I would say good coaching. Nobby Styles used to work with me an awful lot and shortening my stride. Reading the game
you
well.
You said that, using, what was that, using car ties just running in between them?
Yeah, to shorten my stride because obviously being big, I had a long stride. Yeah. But if you're a defender or you've got to get in and out, you've got to have you've got to shorten that stride. Yeah. So he used to get car ties out and get me going in and out of the car ties. And he used to have a saying with me, be in position when you're out of possession. And he used to always say that to me, you know. He taught me a lot of good things, and then as time grew on, I knew my fitness was an asset. Yeah. So I worked on that. I had, you know, when I left West Brom Sheffield Wednesday, I always had a private trainer. So I used to train two or three evenings.
And that was something you just took off your own back to give you that extra edge.
Yeah, and so that's why I never suffered a lot of injuries because I worked on things that they're doing now. I was doing a long time ago by myself.
Touched on Ron being a real mentor for you.
Yeah.
Have you had four or five spells working for him?
I think I did West Brom, obviously, Sheffield Wednesday, Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
And I should have gone to Aston Villa. The deal was agreed for me to go to Aston Villa. But
Is that when you went to Leeds?
Yeah, he was at the World Cup and the deal was agreed before I went, and I know he was really annoyed with me about it because, you know, you give your word, you give your word, don't you?
Yeah.
But Howard Wilkinson, he came through the back door. He agreed the second highest transfer fee in the country because Alan Shearer had just gone for 3.2 million. I think I went for 2.85 million. Right. And so my guy said to me, you've got to do him the courtesy of speaking to him as he's made that offer.
Yeah.
And I liked him straight away. I never signed for football clubs, I signed for managers.
Yeah.
And I liked him straight away. I liked the way he was, and it just felt right. And I've been with Ron a long time, and I love Ron, and I love the way he was. And I just felt it was time, coupled with the fact that I lived in Sheffield, Leeds was closer, my kids were settled in school. It made sense. It just made sense. And I'm glad I did it, because I got to meet a really good guy, and he did a lot for me. My career, you know, I didn't get capped again for England, but I knew that that was going to happen, because the way the media were, and Terry Venables took over, and Terry Venables is in with the media, so that wasn't going to happen. Whether, you know, I say in the book, and it's no disrespect to Gareth Southgate, he went on to have 60 or 70 England caps, but he's not a better defender than me, and if we were on the open market at the time, people would take me over him. But he got, you know, we were at the same time. But that, it is what it is, you know. I'm pleased for him, and that's the way it goes, isn't it?
What was your next conversation like with Ron when you'd gone to
Leeds? Well, you can imagine. It was because I do understand from his point of view, he'd gone off to the World Cup, thought he'd done his business. Yeah. And
what year was this? I'm losing track of where we are.
What World Cup would have that been? I went to Leeds 93.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So he went off 93, 94. So he went off, thought he'd done his business, and then obviously, you know, I apologised to him. He later understood that, you know, my kids were settled. I didn't have to. I just had an house built. It was easy for me, but it was not just. It was the overall package in terms of Howard Wilkinson as well.
Yeah.
And they were paying considerably a lot more money than Aston Villa were paying at the time. So, you know, I'm not going to lie about that. You know, at the end of the day, the overall situation was better for me to go to Leeds.
Wasn't there even the case that royalty thought you were on the way to Villa as well? What was the story
there?
Yeah,
no, in the cup final, the Duchess of Kent said to me, "Oh, you're the one that's off to Aston Villa." And I said, "Well, I haven't quite made up my mind yet, Mark."
It's been a bit random. Yeah, she comes out there.
But obviously, they've
been briefed by her.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it took me back a little bit. But I thought, at least she's paying interest to me. Even royalty did.
That's good. So Ron, I know you've touched upon it in here, and I know you're going to get asked about it in every single interview, but obviously there's the Marcel Desailly thing, and I think you came out firmly on the side of Ron, because you've worked with Ron over a number of years rather than a soundbite that was sent into a microphone. What's your thoughts? Did you get some stick from fellow black pros?
I got a lot of stick. But as I say in the book, and I've got nothing against John Terry, he made a racist comment. I don't condone the racist comment, but I know him as a person. John Terry made the same racist comment.
Yeah.
Did he not? But he was allowed to continue to play football, whereas Ron lost his career over it.
Yeah.
The thing with John Terry is, you know, this is what I'm saying about the media. Ron was convenient for them at the time, because this was now coming to light about the racism thing and whatever. So Ron was convenient. John Terry, they wanted him to play in the Champions League final. They wanted him to play in the European Championship. Kick it out of racism. You know, they didn't deal with it. They said, we'll deal with it. They didn't deal with it. Hence why, you know, Rio and a few of the other black players refused to wear the T-shirts. So it's kind of a bit hypocritical. You know, he was never going to be found guilty in a court of law for being racist. What he should have done, he should have been banned and fined at the time, and be made to apologise. He's not, in my opinion, I don't know John Terry, he's not a racist. He made a comment in the heat of the moment, and I'm not saying it's acceptable, but if you're having a banter on a football pitch, you know, and it's, they were going for the league title, you know, I'm sure Anton Ferdinand was giving as good as he gets. They should have been just made to apologise, get on with it. Yeah. It was dragged out, went to court, wasted taxpayers' money, because he was never going to be found guilty. And in the end, it leaves a sour taste in your mouth, because here's a chance you've got to stamp out if you're saying racism is in football. Here's a chance for you to make a stand, and you don't. And then you get somebody who's made the same comment but loses his career over it. So it's a bit of hypocrisy to me, because neither one of them are racist. And if you're going to talk about Ron and him making a racist comment, fair enough. But look what he's done for black players.
In the context of what he's... I mean, you've said in here you find him warm, engaging, genuine.
In the years I've known him, and I'm 52 years of age, and I've known him since I was 16, and I've never, ever in my company, in the dressing room or anything, mention about anybody's colour, ever. Yeah. So, for me, you know, but I'm not condoning what he said.
Yeah.
And this is where we have to, you know, but what I'm saying is I think Ron was convenient at the time and a little bit of a scapegoat.
Yeah.
And I feel sorry for him. He's a brilliant pundit. He's brilliant. You know, you see some of these people on the TV. No disrespect to David Pleat, but you know, Ron's knowledge of the game and whatever
brings it to life, doesn't he? As well, he's got a colourful turn of phrase as well.
You know, it does. It's just, you know. So I was gutted for Ron. I was gutted that players didn't stand up for him, and I understand everybody's got to make a living. Yeah. I had to make a living.
Yeah.
But if something's wrong, you have to stand up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not supporting him over the comment he's made because I don't agree with it, but I am supporting him that he's not racist. And so, therefore, if somebody, you know, somebody can make a comment in an heat of the moment, that doesn't constitute a racist. If I turn around and say to you, and I'll give you this example, if I say to you, I'm going to kill you, does that make me a murderer? Now, the police might come and investigate me, but at the end of the day, if I haven't committed a murder, they can't charge me for murder.
Yeah.
Right? So
it needs to be in the context of the things he's done, doesn't it, really? And the things he's done, like you said, he's putting forward, you know, with the 3 degrees anyway, you know, he's done more for...
What about Dwight York? What about people like that who didn't come forward and stand up for him?
Yeah.
John Fashanu came to Villa. Ron went and defended him in court.
Yeah.
You know, and this argument is that people used to say to me, well, he signed, you know, black players. He signed good players,
yeah.
irrespective of whether they were black.
Yeah.
Remy Moses, phenomenal football player. You know, if he was white, would he have been any different? He's a phenomenal football player. It's as simple as it is. But I have racism is a big thing for me, and in the context of the book, I believe, and I firmly believe that if you're the best, irrespective of colour, you will get selected, you will get picked, and if you're black, you have to be the best.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying accept it, but it is what it is, and don't make excuses. Be the best, and if you're the best. I don't believe a manager or a chairman, I know for a fact if I came back to UK now, I could get a job in football as a manager. But I'd have to pitch it at an area that was right.
Yeah.
You know, if Dwight York's saying what he's saying, with the best will in the world, if Dwight York goes for the Aston Villa job, you know, and Steve Bruce goes for the Aston Villa job, and he's got 4 promotions from the Championship... Yeah. And he's got no experience, no nothing, right?
That's not a race thing, is it?
That's not racing. That's you know, it's simple
fact of life, yeah.
Yeah, you know. And I get when they say black players don't get the opportunities in terms of sacking and getting another job. But that will come around, just like when there weren't a lot of black players when football started. Yeah. Now all the teams are full of black players. The black players are going for, you know, huge amounts of money. The top fees and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't hear John Barnes, and I love Barnesy to death, but I didn't hear John Barnes complaining when he was playing football and all the top clubs wanted to sign him in the world.
Yeah.
And why did they want to sign him? Because he was the best.
Yeah.
The reason why he doesn't get a manager's job is because tell me where he's been successful.
Yeah, he's not the best manager. On the subject to the best, just touch briefly on the England situation then, because that just must have blown your mind when you realised you got the privilege of playing for England. That must have been such a sense of achievement.
Well, it was, but I expected it. It was late coming.
Yeah,
I expected
to. When
I first played for England, probably about 23, 24.
Yeah.
But it was late. It was late coming. The selection was late coming. Yeah. I felt at the time that Sheffield Wednesday were. We're in the top three, we're at cup finals, we're doing well.
Yeah.
You know, so the players in those sides, Man United, Arsenal, Sheffield Wednesday, are going to get picked for England.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a surprise to me when it came. I was a little bit disappointed it hadn't come soon.
And when you got that call, was it Graham?
Graham Taylor.
Graham Taylor who gave the first call.
Yeah.
So I think, again, the book turned up, you knew you belonged. straight away. You've been playing alongside several of the players or against the players.
Yeah.
So was it a different level, or what did it feel like, that first introduction to play for your country?
Well, the players are obviously better, and you can't make mistakes, you can't switch off. But I remember Harry, who got me into football, Harry Maney, who, I remember him saying to me the first game, he said to me, Colton, pitch is still the same, and the ball's still the same.
Yeah.
Do what you do. Yeah. And that was it. So I did what I did. And, you know, I don't believe Terry Venables can honestly say, and on heart, when he named the first England squad, that I deserved to be omitted.
Yeah.
Everybody else was named apart from me.
Yeah.
I don't know how he can justify that. But I knew that beforehand. Ron had already told me. He said, if Terry gets a job, he's a great coach, brilliant coach, and everybody I've ever known has said that about Terry. But he said, you won't play for England again. I went to Leeds United. I went back to centre back. I was playing the best football of my career at Leeds United. You know, but it is what it is. I'm delighted. If somebody had told me when I was a snotty little kid, you know, going up the Hawthorns, I'd get one full international cap, I'd have taken that.
So thank you to Colton and to Matt Kendrick for that. That was great. So now it's on to test my credentials as a West Bromwich Albion fan. So over to you, Joe Chapman, for the quiz.
I have asked one question from each of the last 15 years.
Okay.
Pretty much as long as I've been able to remember supporting Albion.
And I'm a lot older than you, so I have no such excuse.
Yeah, well, it's been our Premier League era, effectively, you know, in that kind of period of time, right up until the present day. So, one question, each of the last 15 years. Are you ready?
Let's do this.
In 2002-03, who was the opponent when Albion posted their highest attendance of the season?
First Premier League season was...
Straight at the Hawthorns.
Man United.
You're right, it was.
Okay, that's one for me. I used to care back then.
27,129.
I didn't
know averaging that. About 5,000 less than that at the minute. Unfortunately, Albion weren't able to stay in the Premier League that time, so they're back in the Championship. Who scored twice as Albion came from 3-0 down to win 4-3 at West Ham?
Rob Hulse, I was there.
Were you there?
I was indeed.
What an amazing day that would have been. I don't know, Upton Park. How many points did Albion get during the 2004-05 Great Escape?
This is unfair, because this is back, it sounds like I know what I'm talking about here. But Albion got 34 points.
34? They did indeed.
That's three out of three for it. This is going to get worse.
Do you know what's funny? A couple of years before that, West Ham went down with 42.
42, that's right, yeah.
Disgusting.
I found that amusing.
Who was Albion's kit sponsor in 2005-06?
Ah. 2005...
Now he's six. Scratching his head.
2005-06. Oh, I'm going to have to be quick with this. T-Mobile.
Yes.
T-Mobile. Get in.
Halfway through their deal with T-Mobile, they were there. 2007.
Okay.
2006-07, rather. Who was Albion's top scorer with 23 goals?
So 2007 was... Can't beat some expectation of me to be fast here. Kevin Phillips.
No, it wasn't. That's one you got wrong.
I had to get wrong eventually.
Narrowly, he was beaten, actually, Kevin Phillips, because he also surpassed 20. But that season, it was Diamante Camara.
I can remember a piece of this.
23. Scored lots of goals against Wolves that year. Who did Albion beat in the fourth round of the FA Cup 2007-08?
The fifth round.
On their way to the semi-finals.
The fifth round was Peterborough. The fourth round was, don't know, Leicester.
No, the fourth round was Peterborough.
Oh, no! Oh, God. All right, well.
Fifth round was Coventry, when we all had a great day at Coventry and we put five past them. And then we put five past Bristol Rovers in the quarterfinals.
Plunker.
2008-09 now, back in the Premier League, Tony Mowbray, sexy football.
Yep.
Not particularly a sexy finish to the season. How many wins did Albion manage?
Mowbray season. Seven.
No, it was eight.
Eight?
Yeah.
See, I've tailed off here now.
Bottom of the league, but see, as it's getting more and more modern,
yeah,
you're starting to show your old fashioned side.
Got more and more children and less time to watch football.
Who did Albion take Roberto Di Matteo from?
MK Dons.
MK Dons,
he's got five.
2011. How many goals did Peter Odemwingie score in his first Premier League campaign?
15.
It was 15.
Get in. Six.
He was on fire that season. He scored in five successive games at the back end of the season. Kept Albion up.
Do with a few more Peter Odemwingie in some
he is the others. He is the perfect striker for what Albion are missing at the
he'd
minute.
He'd be great.
How many clean sheets in 2011-12 under Roy Hodgson? Gareth McCauley just been signed. Billy Jones was brought in.
It's a good year for clean sheets.
It was a real solid defence with Jonas Olsen, Liam Ridgewell.
I'm going to go 11.
All right, not quite as good as you thought. It was 10. But they kept shutouts against Chelsea, Liverpool, and Aston Villa.
They were nice days.
And Wolves as well. What did Albion pay Blues for in a permanent deal for Ben Foster? They had him on loan, of course, initially.
I'm going to get this wrong, but 4 million?
It was 4 million.
Get in.
That's outrageous business, isn't it? 4 million quid doesn't get you anything these days.
I think we've got a bit of service out of him.
Just a bit. Albion thrashed. You don't hear that at the start of the sentence too often these days. Albion thrashed Sunderland 3-0 in September of the 2013-14 season.
They did.
They signed a lot of new players that summer. Which new signing didn't score? I'm going to give you the options here. Was it not Morgan Amalfitano, Stefan Sessegnon, or Victor Anichebe?
Anichebe.
Oh, well, is that predictable?
Whenever it's a non-scoring one, I always go with Anichebe, I find.
Safe bet.
Or these days, Rondon.
Okay, fair enough, fair point. Where did Albion sign record signing at the time, Brandy Day, from in 2014-15?
Lokomotiv Moscow?
It was not.
Ah.
In fact, you weren't even in the right country. It was Dynamo Kiev.
Plonkett.
In Ukraine.
I think
now actually, tearing it up in China.
There's some people in Moscow who think that is the same country, but we won't get into politics.
No, this is strictly sport. Albion beat Stoke in the last minute of the game in January 2016.
Yeah.
Who scored that last minute winner?
Graham Dorans.
No, Graham Dorans wasn't even at the club.
No, I didn't think he was. What an awful answer that was. Stoke. Go on, when was it?
It was Johnny Evans.
Oh, of course.
Callum McManus cross. Johnny Evans just managed to stick a leg out of the back post and poked it home. Heady days when we just...
Simpler times.
It was. This is the last question.
Final question.
Who was Tony Pulis's first summer signing of the 16-17 campaign? Okay. Clock's ticking.
I'm going to have to accept. I'm going to have to accept. I don't know that one. Go on. Who was it?
It was Matty Phillips.
Oh,
came in from QPR at the start of July for £5 million.
Okay, so I got 8 out of 15, which would prove that I used to know a bit about the Albion, and these days I spend my Saturday afternoons often cleaning up after children. But excellent quiz, Joe. Thank you for that. And for those of you out there that had a go, why don't you get in touch and let us know how much better than me you did. You can get us at Woodman Podcast on Twitter, or you can contact myself or Joe Chapman. And we do just want to generally hear your stories. This is an Albion storytelling podcast, so if you've got a story to tell about West Bromwich Albion, get us in touch. Get in touch with us even. Also, subscribe and let us know if you think it's good or rubbish. Joe, thank you for joining us again today.
Thank you very much, as always. I'm looking forward to next week.
Yes, and onwards and upwards for another Woodman Corner podcast next week. Thanks.